was a program on television that was popular a number of years ago. I think it was back in the 1980s. It was called The Golden Girls. And one of the characters on that program was a tiny little woman. I think her name was Sophia. But she said one time, and I don't remember the context of the show, but I've always remembered this, that she said that being a mother is hard. And she knew that was so because if it was easy, men would do it. The Bible honors mothers and holds motherhood in very high esteem. In Israel, the greatest compliment that you could pay to a woman was to call her a mother in Israel. Deborah considered the most important thing that she did was to be a mother in Israel. She was a judge. She oversaw a great military campaign that resulted in a great victory. But when she and Barak sang the song commemorating that victory, she referred to herself as a mother in Israel. Mother's Day is one of those holidays that I like for that particular reason. It is important that we honor our mothers, and especially that we honor the right kind of mothers. The problem is trying to find that right kind of mother. And I've been thinking for a week or two, where would you go in the world today if you were looking for that role model of an ideal mother? You certainly wouldn't go to any of the media that I can think of. Can you think of a mother who is depicted in a television program or in any movies that you might have seen recently or any books that you've read that you would consider to be an ideal mother or a worthy mother? I can't think of any. I'd really have to go back a long time before the Golden Girls if I were looking for a mother in the media that you might point to and say there is an example that could be followed. And I'd be thinking about June Cleaver, probably, who many people in the audience probably have no idea who she is. But I'm not even sure that she could be held as an example of an ideal mother. But I know a place where we can go to find that, and that's what I want us to think about for a few minutes in the lesson this morning. We can paint a biblical portrait of an ideal mother. And we can do that in the text that we read together. We're going to attempt to do that at least this morning in the text that we read together a few moments ago in Proverbs chapter 31. Beginning in verse 10 in Proverbs chapter 31, we have an example of classic Hebrew poetry. It's not obvious that it's Hebrew poetry in any of our English translations unless you happen to have a translation that blocks it or sets up the text in such a way that it appears to be poetry and not prose. But it is a poem. It has been referred to by scholars, not only biblical scholars, but by scholars of language and poetry down through the centuries as one of the great examples of poetry. It is an acrostic poem. There are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. There are 22 verses in this poem. And each successive verse begins with a successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Again, that's not something that you could see in English. There's no way to translate that. But it is poetry. It's interesting, too, I think, that this is not, this depiction of this woman in Proverbs chapter 31 is not a picture or it's not something that was depicted or painted by a man. It's not uncommon even to hear people talk about Solomon's depiction of the worthy woman in Proverbs chapter 31. This is not a proverb or a poem of Solomon. If you go back to the beginning of chapter 31, you see where this came from. The words of King Lemuel, the oracle, which his mother taught him. And so this depiction of the worthy woman, the excellent wife, as she's called in the New American Standard Translation, is what Lemuel's mother told him. This is the ideal picture. I understand and recognize that most often we use this to talk about an ideal wife, and it does begin that way. It does start out that way. But I think not only does it show us the characteristics of an ideal wife, but it shows us also in very clear form the characteristics of an ideal mother. And so I want us to think about it in that way for just a few minutes in the lesson this morning. We're not going to take a lot of time analyzing every word or even every verse, but we just want to look at some of the general things. This is an outline, incidentally, that I've used when I've taught the book of Proverbs. I've used this in Bible classes before. But what do we see about this woman? You know, when we break this down, what are some of the things that we see? Well, we learn something about her marriage in the very beginning. And one of the things that we learn in verse 10, for example, is that a good wife is hard to find. An excellent wife, the New American Standard text says. Again, some translations say a worthy woman. An excellent wife, who can find? For her worth is far above jewels. The Hebrew word that's translated jewels in the New American Standard is very often rendered rubies. Jewels or rubies, the point is exactly the same. They are valuable because they are relatively rare. Their value is associated with the fact that there aren't a significant number of them. If they were numerous, if these jewels were numerous, if they could be found any place, then there wouldn't be any special or significant value to them. And so she tells her son right at the very beginning that it's not an easy thing to find an excellent wife. And when you find a woman like this, you understand and recognize what her value is. In verse 11, the heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. And then 12, she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. If we're going to talk about an ideal mother, this is the right place to start, isn't it? It begins with marriage. It begins with a man being married to a woman that he knows he can trust. She's excellent because she's valuable because he doesn't have any reason to be jealous of her. He has absolute confidence and trust in her. And the text implies, and we'll say more about this in just a moment, but the text implies that they work very well together in terms of providing for the things that they need in life. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. And then he begins in verse 13 by talking about some of the things, some of the characteristics of this woman. For example, in verse 13, she looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She is like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is still night and gives food to her household and so on. We would sum that up by saying that she is industrious, I think. In verse 13, again, she works with her hands in delight. She does the things that she needs to do to provide for her family, and she does them without complaining. You know, a lot of times it's not uncommon even to find women, wives, and mothers who are doing the things that need to be done to provide for the home. But when you talk to them about it, or when they discuss it or talk about it, it's always in such a way that they're complaining about the things that they're doing. It's obvious that they don't enjoy the things that they're doing. But the text tells us here that she does these things with delight. Verse 14, she brings food from afar. In other words, she goes to great lengths to make sure that her family has just the right kinds of things that they need. She considers a field and buys it, and from her earnings, she plants a vineyard. Verse 16. This lesson is certainly not the place to talk about working women, working mothers, and whether or not it's right for women to work outside the home. Whatever you think about that, however you feel about that, there's not any question that this woman, the one who's called an ideal wife, an excellent mother, has some occupation beyond just being in the house. She buys the field. Look at verse 16 again. She considers a field and buys it. And from her earnings, the text says, literally in the Hebrew, the fruit of her hands, the fruit of her palms. In other words, not her husband brought home the check, he brought home the bacon. And then she took some of the money and invested it in some way or another. This is income that she has provided with her own hands. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. And the point that he's making here is, though, that whatever it is that she's doing, She's doing it for the benefit of her family. She's doing it for the good of her family. She's not doing it to fulfill herself. She's not doing it to provide a separate income for herself, to take care of herself separately from her family in some way or another. So again, however you feel about what the Bible might teach about women working outside of the house or outside of the home, this woman is involved in some kind of activity, some kind of commerce outside the house with the intention of taking care of her family and providing for her family. She considers a field and buys it, and from her earnings, she plants a vineyard. And you can skip on down even to, we won't read all of these verses which say the same thing or elaborate on the same thing. But what is the consequence of all of this, or the result of all of this? Well, verse 21, she is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all of her household are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. And then the text says that her husband is known in the gates. She's doing all of these things. She's accomplishing all of these things to help to provide for her family. But not only just for her family. Look at verse 20. The text says she extends her hand to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. So she's doing all of these things to make sure that she's taking care of herself and taking care of her family, and she does that. She doesn't have any fear of them not having the right kind of clothes to wear depending on the weather. She's taking care of that. She's provided for that. But the text says that she's also concerned about helping other people. She extends her hand to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. When I read Proverbs chapter 31 and verse 20, that always puts me in memory of Tabitha in the New Testament, the woman whom Peter raised from the dead in Acts chapter 9. You remember the story of that. And she was a woman who was constantly meeting the needs of other people. When Peter arrived at Joppa, and before he'd even seen her body, the widows were showing Peter the garments that she'd made for them. And this mother is not just concerned about the needs of her own family. That's an important point. We're talking about an ideal mother. It's one thing to be fiercely protective of your husband and your children. One thing to want to make absolutely certain that what you're doing is providing for your own family. But in the minds of some women, that's the extent of their obligation and responsibility. Not so with the picture, this ideal picture that we have painted here. She's very much concerned about meeting the needs of other people as well. And the consequence of all, and you see the same thing in verses later on, like in verse 27, she looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. But the result of all of this is in verse 23. Again, her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She enhances the reputation of her husband. All these works, again, were designed to make sure that her family had the things that they needed and that she was able to help and assist those who were less fortunate than she was. The text tells us something about her character in verses 25 and 26. Strength and dignity are her clothing, we're told. Strength and honor, some translations say. Now, we've already seen verses that talk about physical clothing. She makes sure that her children and that her husband have the right kind of clothes to wear, and she has provided for herself physical clothing as well. But Lemuel's mother tells him, I think here in verses 25 and 26, there's a more important kind of clothing. And that has to do with her character. A woman who chooses to clothe herself in strength and dignity, or strength and honor, as some translations say, is a woman who's determined that she's going to serve God, that she's going to put God first. And as a result of that, verse 25 says in the New American Standard text, she smiles at the future. One translation says she laughs at what is to come. Now, that doesn't mean that she takes no consideration or no concern for the future at all. As a matter of fact, I think it means just the opposite of that. I think the idea behind laughing at the future here is she's not afraid of the future. She has her priorities right. She's putting God first. She's clothing herself with strength and dignity. In other words, she's concerned about her character. Verse 26, she opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. You know, when you, if you were looking for the ideal mother by just looking at what mothers say and do on television programs or in the movies, you'd get the impression that the purpose of a mother is to always be ready with some snappy, smart-aleck response to every situation and every circumstance, a wisecrack of some kind or another, something impertinent or something funny. I'm not suggesting that there's no place for humor, but she opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. In other words, we can count on her for good, sound counsel, for good, sound advice. It's not surprising that over and over again, we find people returning to their mothers, men and women returning to their mothers to ask for counsel, to ask for advice, to ask for help in dealing with situations and problems that they encounter in life. Her character, in other words, is the right kind of character. She's a godly person. She's someone who's clothed herself with dignity and honor. We read something about her family life then. In verse 27, she looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. And then in verse 28, her children rise up and bless her. If your mother is still living, and if her character approximates the kind of character that we're talking about in connection with the ideal mother, let me ask, do you do this? Do you do this? Do you rise up and call her blessed? In other words, do you praise her for the things that we've been talking about? That's not only advice to little children, by the way. To all of us who have mothers who've tried to live their lives, especially mothers who've tried to live their lives in the way that this picture is painted, this ideal picture is painted in Proverbs chapter 31. And how often do we do that? Wouldn't it be a shame if the only time that we ever made any effort as children to honor our mother was on the second Sunday in May? I think that's right. Is that not right? Is that not usually when the Mother's Day holiday is designated the second Sunday in May? Wouldn't it be tragic, though, if that's the only time that we've done it? And did you even remember to do it today, I guess would be a question. Have you made some provision to let your mother know how much you appreciate all of the things that she's done for you? Not only that, but verse 28, her husband also, and he praises her as well. And look what he says to her, guys, verse 29. What I want you to think about is, when was the last time you said something like this, or something similar to this to your wife? Many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. It would be too embarrassing to ask for a show of hands. Or even to ask in some other kind of context, when was the last time, men, that you said something like that you paid that kind of compliment to your wife? And I actually heard a man say just in the last few days, in connection with Mother's Day, well, you know, my mother's not living, so, you know, I'm off the hook. In terms of, did you thank, fellas, have you thanked your wife today for being an ideal mother to your children? If your mother's not living and you can't do that for her, have you done it for your wife? Have you told her? And really what this guy is saying, I think, I don't remember where I ran across this paraphrase of Proverbs chapter 31 and verse 29. Many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. But I saw it paraphrased like this. There are some good women out there, but you've got them all beat. That is absolutely not a translation of the text. But it is a pretty good modern day approximation of what this guy is trying to say to his wife. You're the best. And a big part of how I feel about you, a big part of that is, in this context at least, that you have been this kind of mother. That you've been the kind of mother who's made it possible for me to achieve the things that I've achieved in life. Now, why is all of this so? What is the secret? And you notice that I have secret in quotation marks. I could have done air quotes, but I'm not real comfortable doing air quotes. But so I put it in quotations on the. And the reason I put it in quotation because it's not really a secret, is it? What is it that makes this woman ideal as a wife and a mother? It is this. Verse 30. Charm and beauty. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, fleeting, in other words. But a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. She's godly. She's a child of God. You understand that Lemuel's mother is telling him, you go find a godly woman. If Lemuel's mother were a Christian, if this were written in the New Testament dispensation, I'm confident that what she would have said to him is, son, you find a woman who is a Christian. Other things can be deceitful. Other things can be fleeting. Other things are going to pass. But a woman who's godly, a woman who's a Christian, a woman who puts her confidence and trust in God, that's the woman who will be praised. And that's why we say to the young men from time to time that you need to be looking. You're looking for someone to date. You're looking for someone to perhaps even be thinking about spending the rest of your life with. The number one thing you need to be looking for is what her relationship with God is. That's the most important thing. And there's nothing that even compares to that. There's nothing that even comes close to that. Is she a Christian? And incidentally, let me just say, that's not a guarantee. It's not a guarantee that she will always remain faithful. It's not a guarantee that your life will always be idyllic or perfect in some way or another. But the odds of you having a happy marriage and that you being able to raise godly children are considerably improved if you, as a young man, are committed to God, and the young woman that you're interested in is committed to God. The young woman that you choose to spend the rest of your life with is committed to God as well. And so we emphasize and stress over and over again the importance of finding someone who is a Christian. And we would say the same thing to the young ladies. You're looking for the ideal husband, the man you want to be, an ideal father for your children. The principle would be exactly the same, that we're looking for someone who is a Christian. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. That's the biblical portrait of an ideal mother. I'm looking in the faces of some ideal mothers, even as I'm standing here. And I know that some of you have on your minds this morning your mothers in other places that you're not able to be with today, or perhaps even your mothers who've passed on, but you're remembering what they meant to you in your life. What an incredible blessing it is to have a mother like the one about whom we read in Proverbs chapter 31. A woman who is dedicated and committed to God. And dedicated to God in having the right kind of relationship with her husband. And dedicated to God in having the right kind of a relationship with her children. And working to bring her children up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Thank God for godly mothers. We need them badly in this country. We sing a song that somewhere in our songbook that has that line in it, that how badly godly mothers are needed in this land. It's really a shame that we live in a culture, that we live in a time where motherhood is looked down on and where motherhood is considered to be some kind of a burden. It's a great honor to be a godly wife. It's a great honor to be, if that blessing is granted to you by God, to be a godly mother. And so think about your own life and whether or not these characteristics apply to you. If you have a mother, again, that approximates this, you make sure that not just today, but often, You let her know how much that means to you. And a wife who's been a godly wife and who's helping you or has helped you to raise godly children, you make sure that you're praising her for that. Can we help or assist you in any way in becoming a Christian? Becoming the kind of person that this woman was, dedicated and committed to God. We would be glad to help you obey the gospel to become a Christian this morning. If you have perhaps need to acknowledge some kind of public sin, or maybe you need prayers on your behalf, then we'll be happy to hear what we can do to help or to assist you to be restored to being in a right relationship with God. If there's anything at all that we can do to assist you in obeying the gospel, then please come down to one of these front seats and let us help you do that right now. While we stand and sing, we invite you to come.